involvement really has been just in preliminary design of a new booth and also discussing some infrastructure issues. Many of you may not know, but there's actually a sewer main that goes underneath the booth area. And we have some issues whether we should replace that section while the booth is not there. This way we won't have to worry about it for 100 years. Or maybe it's fine, and maybe whatever we do, we just build safely over that. We've had some discussions about possibly doing a prefab concrete structure to help out with the building process. Because as most of you know, it's very close quarters there. There's a lot of cars that come and go each day. Possibly we can do a concrete structure that just would have to be faced with stone and have you. John's done a little bit more research on that. And then just utility issues and spacing issues. So we'd like to try to incorporate whatever gate mechanisms we use into the structure, into the stonework, so they don't look so commercial in appearance. We'd also like to try to get away from the metal rail that used to be on the back of the booth and do something with some type of either reinforced stone veneer wall or some type of decorative bollard. But to try to keep it more residential looking than really commercial looking. And that's really where John's architectural expertise kind of comes into play. Hope I didn't say too much. Anything else you can add, John?
Well, no, I'm certainly glad the survey was done because I think it gives, you know, the feedback from the people that actually live here is incredibly important. And as John said, we want to maintain the character of this landmarked property. And at the same time, we do want to protect any officers that are in the structure from either an accidental or an intention crash into the building. So it's got to be very well reinforced, completely bulletproof. And I think we're going to create a very safe environment for whoever's in that booth at any time.
The one thing that was done was we also checked into, John, if you could talk about the foundation of it.
The Public Works Department did some minor exploratory work to see what the footings were and how much of a footing was there. And I think the footings were approximately 30 inches deep, I believe. Is that true, Alan? Yeah. Alan was there. If we do a reinforced structure, we would most likely need a true 42-inch footing. And at that point, we'd have to be careful on exactly where that sewer line is. And of course, we'd have to do some scheduling regarding the work. This is not the type of the work that you could do in the middle of the day with all the traffic coming and going. This work would most likely have to be scheduled at night, you know, where it's safer to do some of the preliminary, you know, work.
So. Yeah, we would be hopefully getting construction bids from contractors that do have experience doing actual road work, you know, and they'll be able to keep one lane at least open as much as possible. There will be times where both lanes will have to be shut down. And we'll schedule all that ahead of time, and everyone will be kept informed about when and what is going to be happening.
Don't talk to Metro Construction.
All right, so with that, I'll first where the trustees will ask questions, because maybe some of their questions may answer some of the public's questions, and then we'll go to the public to do that. So, Trustee McHugh?
Questions to whom?
To, just in general, to John or to John Ledwith right now.
I don't actually have any questions.
Okay. Trustee Bozzoni?
Yes, there were two issues in the original survey, which was six questions, a dotting committee, but it had a more more explanation on the costs and the operability of the windows and the specificity of the technology. And also, what my concern was that this survey did not include gate closures. How long are the gates going to be closed for each option? There was a ballpark figure, but the last option, which the residents voted for, has the longest possible closure. We're going to see if we can work around it, but we might have 2-3 weeks where the front gates are closed and we have to use the south gate. Just letting you all know ahead of time, that's what you voted for. The trucks will be using the north gate. That's what the residents wanted.
We're using the north gate again with access to the south Trustee McFadden?
No questions.
All right, so we'll open up for public comment. I just ask that when someone's speaking, that we let them ask their question and, you know, give them that moment, and then we'll just make sure we get that everyone can be heard, because it is very, very helpful to all of us. So, first question. Yes?
John, can the sewer be moved?
It's a possibility. It could be excavated and offset so it's not underneath the building. It's been there for a very, very long time. It hasn't been problematic. I just wouldn't want to build a new structure above it with a 90-year-old pipe below it, that's all.
Right, but to the where does the village property on the diagram go north of the gate and around it? Where does the sewer line go? Where's it
going? The sewer line is almost parallel with the road at that point. It goes straight down the hill towards Route 17.
And it connects to 17 then?
Yeah,
there's a manhole actually that you can see just beyond the where the gatehouse was.
I don't know if it's center, but it pretty much goes right underneath, you know, the building and then out the front gate, and that goes to the town of Tuxedo.
Okay, I had another question.
Yes, go ahead.
All right, so some of us are a little confused at how many officers we have right now. The chief is still part-time?
Full-time.
He's full-time.
Our chief is full-time.
Okay, so then we have two other officers who are part-time?
Three full-time other officers.
Okay, so we have the chief is full and three other fulls?
Yes.
And then how many part? We're going to have two more parts as at the end of August?
No, we have how many part-time officers? 15 now?
I believe if you count these two, it'll be 15.
15
part-timers.
And we have 16 slots for part-timers, so we're almost at our full staff.
So what's capacity?
16 is what we have for civil service for part-timers, and we have three full-timers and a chief is what we have with civil service.
It's important to note that some of the men can only work 20 hours a week. That's how they have a status of part-time. A lot of them also retire. They can only make $30,000 a year. So there are further constraints. That's why we have, I heard everyone gasp when they heard how many. Mm-hmm. They don't work like every day.
Okay. So the question is, in a response that was dated August, it was at the last meeting, July 26th, what happens when there's scheduling issues and the town does not respond?
To what, ma'am?
To an emergency, a call, anything.
In the
Between
town?
The hours of, say, 9 and 6
We do not respond
morning.
To town calls, we're not the town police.
Sorry?
We do not respond to town calls, we're not the town police.
No.
Is that the
question? It's a village question.
The town doesn't respond to calls in here unless we call them for backup.
You're confusing town with village, Ms. Bodney. The overnight in the town got eliminated. Overnight in the village is never eliminated.
But how many officers are on duty during that particular period of time?
Two.
Always two.
One at the gate and one in a bar?
Yes, ma'am.
24/7.
Just to give you an idea, you know, and I may have my numbers not perfectly put in my file. You have, you know, full-time officers work 40-hour weeks. Part-time officers can work up to 20 hours a week. So we have what's called civil service. Every employee has to be part of civil service that works for the village, whether it's union or non-union. You're part of civil service or of a union status. So everyone has a slot that they fall into. So if we'll talk about the police department. We have part-time officers, and of part-time officers, we have 16 slots in civil service for part-time officers. We have one slot for a full-time chief, and we have three slots for full-time officers. The chief acts as a full-time officer.
So
you know,
we have
in the eyes of union. So you've got union things and you've got civil service. So you kind of have to look at the two together. So you have, I think it's 1,080 hours a year. Am I correct? 1,040 a year that we have to fulfill one slot. So if you multiply that by two, that's 2,080 hours a year we are filling with employees to man the police department. If you do your math, you can't only have three full-time officers to man that many hours. Your budget would be enormous if we did that because of all of the, you know, New York State, you know, the regulations and also the retirement benefits, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why we fill with also part-time officers. Part-time officers do not have all of those benefits. A lot of them are already retired, so they already have those benefits already coming to them. Does that make
sense? Who's going to be in the booth?
It will be up to the staffing of the chief, whether it's the full-time or the part-time officer, there will be someone there.
Ms. Buffy, it'll be a police officer.
Regardless of who's in there, it has to be specifically built to withstand...
It's a police officer.
Ms. Guathamy, before we had gate guards who were not allowed to carry a pistol. Now we have police officers who are fully armed. The police officers that are part-time don't get paid when they don't work. It was a win-win for everybody.
But also, just to be clear, we had gate guards, and this was comments that were brought up to us from gate guards. They looked like police officers. And they were feeling a little threatened because if someone were to drive by, they thought they were a police officer and they could be harmed as such, and they were not able to protect themselves. So that was a safety issue. That was a definite safety issue that we addressed. And for the community also, you have to think about this. We had one officer on duty and one gate guard on duty. I don't know if all of you are aware of, but if there is certain types of calls that are made to the police department, call it domestic violence, an officer cannot go to that call by himself. There must be two officers to do that call. And I think that's, is that state law or union law, detective? Where does that come down from?
There's no law, but it's absolutely dangerous.
Right, it's always two. Two have to make the call.
So then who will be manning the gate if that happens?
That's when you would always call. You always had to call for domestic violence.
Who are we going to call?
Well, you call either the county
or the
federal. Not that we should outline our entire security
right.
In an open meeting.
Exactly.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment, the chief and I would be glad to meet with you one-on-one to discuss any of this stuff. I know some of you are unsatisfied with some of the answers that the mayor's given in the past to speak to us, but there's a reason we don't answer these questions in a public meeting to outline our security for anyone to find holes in. There is New York State Troopers, there's Orange County Sheriffs, MTA Police.
So now you're scaring the residents too?
No, not at all.
If I could comment, I think that that's really a red herring.
What?
That we can't discuss certain things about our security in front of the public.
I just said I didn't really talk about anything.
No, but I mean, I don't see why we can't discuss it in a meeting. I mean, for example, if there's a domestic violence call, shouldn't we be able to say that we can contact the town police without giving any security issues away?
What do the town police have to do with us?
Well, I mean, in the past, the town police come and help us if we ask and vice versa.
Now the state police and Orange County Sheriff's.
But I don't see this as
a... Tuxedo's been known as an island by itself. Town of Tuxedo Park is always, sometimes I joke around and say it's 1965 in the community. So it's a little outdated on this part of the county. The town of Tuxedo today has eliminated the whole midnight shift. There is no police officers at night. Southern part of Orange County, Tuxedo, the village of Tuxedo Park, there's no other patrols in the area. Very seldom do you get a sheriff's car down here or a state police car. So we became on our own. So the decision to put two officers on, one in the booth, one on the road, was the right decision that the board made, absolutely. We're trying to work on a lot of policies and procedures, and guidelines to address those issues if we need multiple police officers at the scene, and we're addressing it through 911 and mutual aid protocols that were part of those committees. So a lot of security is being enhanced in here. And Mr. McFadden, we just don't want to tell you everything that we do, but it is getting safer, and we're addressing those issues, and we are moving in the right direction.
Well, again, just to comment, I know everything that is being discussed under security, right. The veil of security. And again, I don't think there's anything other than, for example, in the discussion we had.
No, and most of it
that
will
can't be discussed publicly.
And most of it will be open conversation.
But I do think that we have to respect our chief's decision of what he would like to speak about in public.
I am. I had a meeting with him. He knows what I'm talking
and
about.
And I think we have to respect that.
Of course.
That he is the chief.
And what I'm referring to is something that we already agreed could be discussed. The chief and I could be discussed publicly.
I think it's very important that we don't transmit. These meetings are open meetings. They're put on the internet right now. There's a lot of bad parts of Rockland and Orange County, and they see, and they look at our security, and they find holes in it. You know, we don't want that. We don't want that. So, keep, you know, take, from when I got on the board, my personal opinion is that security has been enhanced. We are much safer now than when we were a year ago or before that. All right? It's just, when we say we don't like to put it out on the internet so everybody can look at it and punch holes in it, there's some bad guys punching holes in it too. Not only us.
How can you say we're better off and more secure when the gate's up? At times.
There's two people with pistols right now.
Please don't interrupt me.
Not one.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Gentlemen, I'll answer this very quickly.
I really would like to comment.
Excuse me. I'll just answer this very quickly. The back gate was up quite a bit because the back gate was broken. The back gate, if you're not aware, is completely brand new now. New arms, new mechanisms, everything. I want to thank Trustee McHugh, who, you know, took that and made sure it was not operating well. The wires were made in such a way when it was built years and years ago, not to anyone's fault. They were in the way of if a car got too close to the speaker or to the curb right there, they would actually start hitting where all the wires were coming in, et cetera. So that has all been with between John Ledwith, Jeff Voss and his group, Alan McHugh. All of that has been corrected, brand new. And the gate right now, you'll see sometimes up because it has a sensor on it. It's got to be adjusted a little bit. It can identify certain size cars. We've got to get it to where it can identify because a lot of cars are a little bit smaller. We've got to make sure those are tweaked, correct? So that system is working, as far as I know, very well. Yes, Chief, on the back gate. The front gate, when it was hit, when the building was hit, a lot of the wires, et cetera, that operate all of that have been compromised. Let's call it that it's been put together just to hold on until we now can fix it all. We didn't want it temporarily. As you can see, we temporarily fixed the speaker box, and it's not that great. You know, we want to put in the correct system, but we did not want to spend the amount of money it would be to make it perfect if it wouldn't be the right system for what was going to happen there. So, unfortunately, it does take some patience. Is it left open by error sometimes? It was open by error even with your gate guards at times. Right now we're a little bit more sensitive because we're aware of a situation that's happening. You know, we're aware of all the problems that are occurring. So you do become a little bit more sensitive of certain things. We have new officers that are being trained. They're learning the system that is kind of an outdated system of opening and closing gates and dealing with another box to open and close the back gate. We're going to be making that much more streamlined. So, you know, yes, those are the issues, but is your safety being compromised? They see every car that's coming through. They're far more trained than any gate guard was trained because of the police training they have. So, with that regard, but yes, there is some frustration in that, and, you know, that will get better and better, and it is getting better and better. Sometimes they will leave it open in the mornings when a lot of buses are coming through because they know those buses are coming through and they're trying to keep the traffic flow going. That was implemented even before the booth went down. You know, for those that weren't there at the 6 and 7 o'clock in the mornings when that was done. Does that answer some of your questions?
I'd like to comment.
Absolutely.